Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has praised the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, but slated Sinn Féin in his address to the Fine Gael Ardéis in Athlone over the weekend. On the Fianna Fáil leader, Mr. Varadkar said Mr. Martin has been a good Taoiseach, and Fine Gael thanked him. To applause from delegates, the Taoiseach has said through difficult circumstances, including the later stages of the pandemic and the war in Ukraine, Micheál Martin has been a voice for decency, kindness and common sense. Political editor with the Irish Times, Pat Leahy, is on the line now. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Owen.
It seems that all is hunky-dory between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil after the Ardéis at the weekend, and Leo Varadkar quite impressed with Micheál Martin. Your reaction?
Yeah, I think what Leo Varadkar is trying to do is to make sure that the transition of power, which, as you noted, takes place next month between himself and Micheál Martin in the Taoiseach's office goes as smoothly as possible. Certainly a mood amongst Fine Gaelers at the moment of excitement that they're taking over the Taoiseach's office again. Bear in mind that this sort of changeover of power, and it'll be accompanied by a cabinet reshuffle, likely a minimal switching of roles, but to some degree it kind of doesn't matter with the cabinet reshuffle how extensive the changes are. It's all the speculation that goes on in advance and all the kind of political destabilization that causes at the highest level of government that is really the biggest effect of a cabinet reshuffle. You'll find that, you know, general public don't care all that much about which politician has which job. But they know who the Taoiseach is. They will see a change. This sort of change has never been done before. So, you know, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are not operating off a playbook that somebody in the civil service has about what to do, you know, based on the last time this happened. This hasn't happened before. So so to that extent, I suppose they're in virgin territory. And I suppose what Leo Varadkar is seeking to do is to make that changeover as smooth as possible.
He dealt with some of the big topics of the day at the Ardéis, of course, talking about the tax bans, climate action, housing, etc. What kind of a reaction did he get from members that were there?
Well, you know, like a party leader always gets a good reaction from his delegates at an Ardéis, and you know, if he didn't get a good reaction from his own guys, then you know something would be deeply wrong. And again, comparable to what Micheál Martin had some weeks ago at the Fine Gael Ardéis and Mary Lou MacDonald at the Sinn Féin Ardéis. I suppose a more important audience for Leo Varadkar and for every political leader is not so much his own members, but the voters out there, and particularly the swing voters who will decide the next election. All that having been said, I think that there is the mood in Fine Gael has been significantly transformed, I think, from what it was back before the summer when, you know, the cloud of the Garda investigation into the leak of a document a couple of years ago and, you know, a possible prosecution of Leo Varadkar, that was still hanging over him. And while a prosecution might have been at all times I felt unlikely, that cloud was still there. And of course, had there been a prosecution, he would have immediately had to resign as both a minister and party leader. The other thing I think that has, you know, the lifting of that cloud has changed the mood in the party, along with the prospect of immediate tenure in the Taoiseach's office. The other thing that has, I think, has changed the party's mood is the public and voter mood towards them, as measured by opinion polls, and that comes in the wake of the recent budget, which was, of course, a massive giveaway budget. We see those giveaways are continuing and will continue for the coming months in various different channels. And I think that has been well received. It has seen a bit of an uptake in support, personally, for Mr. Varadkar and for Fine Gael And I think that that has lifted the mood in the party as well.
On tax, he recommitted to ensuring that no individual earning below €50,000 would pay the top rate of tax. He told delegates that next year, a middle-income couple will pay €2,000 less in income tax under Pascal Donoghue than they would under Pierce Doherty of Sinn Féin, and he says that's a fact. On housing, the Taoiseach said the government needs to do much more and accelerate its Housing for All plan. He said 16,000 people bought their first home in the last 12 months, and that was that total was higher than in the last 15 years. He added that there was a need to build even more social housing, contending that new social housing provision will break records this year. I believe afterwards, speaking to journalists then, Pat, he said that Fine Gael is a party that voters can trust in difficult times because it has been a tried and tested government, and that ties in then with what you're saying in terms of the opinion polls.
Yeah, look, you know, I think that this is part of Fine Gael's self-image, really, you know, is that it's the party that the country turns to in times of crisis. And, you know, Fine Gael used to talk about how it was their role to clean up the mess after Fianna Fáil had been in government. Now, obviously, they don't talk about it in those terms anymore, but it is still quite important to Fine Gael's image that, you know, that sense of themselves as the, you know, solid party of stable government that the country turns to in times of crisis. Now, I think you find that amongst voters in general, that would be a much harder sell. And the fact of the matter is Fine Gael is now in its third consecutive term in government. You know, it had never before done two consecutive terms, not to mind three. And it will be seeking at the next election the support of voters to enter government for the fourth consecutive time. That's never been done by any party. So I suppose what Mr. You know, one of the great tropes of modern political discourse, and you see Sinn Féin using this all the time, even Fianna Fáil used it in the last election, was to promise voters change. Well, you know, Fine Gael, having been in government for three terms, can't reasonably suggest that it represents change. So what Mr. Bradker, I think, is doing is kind of casting around, looking for another message, and I think that that is the one he is hitting on. You know, the party of stability, of sensible government. At the same time, I also expect him, you know, to send out messages for the people he used to call the people who get up early in the morning. You know, the aspirational voters mm-hmm. who are in favour of low taxes, and that's why, you know, that tax message, I think we saw again at the weekend. This is a difficult political tightrope for Bradker and for Fine Gael to walk. But then again, it is for all incumbent governments that are running for re-election.
Last Thursday, we were joined by Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, for an in-depth interview, and people can listen back to it on our website, kfmradio.com. But I put the question to him that in a couple of years' time, could we possibly see Fine Gael going into government with Sinn Féin? Here's what he had to say about that.
We won't serve with Sinn Féin. We absolutely respect and understand why people will support different political parties, including Sinn Féin. But I made reference to the fact that, of course, there's three different political parties in this government making it work. And we do have different political traditions, but we have an awful lot in common as well. And we build on what we have in common. And I and my colleagues in Fine Gael profoundly disagree with Sinn Féin regarding their views, regarding how a modern Ireland should be led, should be grown and should be looked after. We have principally different views with regard to Europe, with regard to our economy, and with regard to how our country needs to be led and needs to respond back to all of the issues that you have raised. And come the election in 2025, we'll be making the case for what we've achieved, asking for further support in the next Dáil, and making the case for what we can bring to a government. And at that point, that's when we'll have the debate.
Minister for Finance Pascal Donoghue. And Pat Leahy, it seems as though Taoiseach Leo Varadkar doubled down on that view over the weekend at the Ardèche and said, no chance, Fine Gael won't serve with Sinn Féin.
Yeah, not surprisingly, that was a message that was heartily endorsed by the delegates there. I think one of the things that Leo Varadkar will do in the run into the next election is that he will try to frame that contest as a choice between Fine Gael and Sinn Féin. And that is in a bid, I suppose, to try and slightly outflank Fianna Fáil, because, you know, and there's no getting away from this. And this one will be one of the great complications of, you know, the politics of this second, it's not a second term in government, it's the second half of the term of this government. And it's this, that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are political or governmental allies, of course, in the coalition. They work to the same agenda as laid out in the programme for government. But they will be electoral rivals when the next election comes. And I think that one of the things that Varadkar will do, as I say, is to try and frame that election as a choice between Fine Gael and Sinn Féin. And, I mean, it remains to be seen what Fianna Fáil say about coalition with Sinn Féin, or the possibility of it after the next election in the run-in to that vote. But my guess is that they won't rule it out completely. And I think that, you know, Leo Varadkar will try and make that a dividing line between himself and whoever the leader of Fianna Fáil at that time is.
Okay, if we focus for a moment on Sinn Féin then, Pat, and at the weekend you had a very interesting piece written in the Irish Times, and the first couple of paragraphs say, very unusually, these have been a bumpy few weeks for Sinn Féin and its leader. For perhaps the first time since her party's bull run began in 2020, Mary Lou MacDonald has faced a series of controversies, difficult questions, uncomfortable media interviews and negative headlines. The party's normally voluble media performance disappeared from the Dáil plinth for a few weeks. What do you attribute that to, and what did you mean in that piece, Pat?
Yeah, well, I was making the point that, you know, there's been a few controversies since the Dáil returned after the summer that have that have been quite uncomfortable, I think, for Mary Lou MacDonald and for Sinn Féin. I mean, the biggest one was the conviction of Jonathan Dowdle, former party councillor and an ally of Mary Lou MacDonald's, in relation to his involvement with the Hutch crime family. And, you know, every time that was referenced in media reports, he was described as a former Sinn Féin councillor. And it was deeply uncomfortable, I think, for Mary Lou MacDonald, who not alone, you know, had posed for lots of photographs, which were gleefully reproduced everywhere in the media, you know, but had accepted a political donation from Jonathan Dowdle. And, you know, as I say, that was deeply uncomfortable for Mary Lou MacDonald. There was the publication of a biography of her by Shane Ross, in which he raised questions about the financing of her house. Her response to that was for her husband to threaten legal action against Shane Ross, and that in turn shone a spotlight onto the legal actions that have been taken by several Sinn Féin politicians, including one by Mary Lou MacDonald herself against RTE. Now, Sinn Féin supporters point out that, you know, lots of other politicians have sued the media for defamation, and that's of course true. But I can't ever remember an instance of a party leader and someone who is, you know, in line perhaps to be Ireland's next Taoiseach suing RTE for defamation. And the point that many people in the media, myself included, have made is that whatever the merits of these individual cases might have, it begins, when there's so many of them, it begins to look like a campaign tactic, if you like, by Sinn Féin to limit media scrutiny and to blunt media criticism of the party. And again, Mary Lou MacDonald and the party have found questions about all that quite uncomfortable. And when they come out onto the plinth in Leinster House, now that those outings have restarted, you know, they find that instead of being able to get their message across about housing or whatever, they're being asked questions about these sort of issues. And that's definitely not what they what they would like. And I suppose it's kind of the first time in the last 2 years or so that they've had to face those sort of headwinds against them. Now, you know, my guess is that much of this will blow over, that it doesn't change the, none of this stuff changes the fundamental structure of where our politics are, is at the moment, which is, you know, Sinn Féin defending a very strong lead over Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And, you know, there's no reason to think that that won't continue, or to think that Sinn Féin won't be the largest party in the next Dáil. But being the largest party in the next Dáil doesn't automatically mean that you will form the government. Sinn Féin still has to find a route to government, assuming that the party doesn't win an overall majority, and I suspect that the days of overall majorities in Irish politics are long gone. But if that is the case, then Sinn Féin has to find a route to government. And it seems to me it's got two ways of potentially doing that. The first is as the head of a left-only coalition that doesn't include either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. And looking at the polls at the moment, the numbers aren't nearly there for that. And even if they were, I think that would be a kind of a very fractious and disparate coalition and difficult to hold together. And if I'm right about all that, then the sole remaining route to government for Sinn Féin is with Fianna Fáil. And none of us know yet exactly just what Fianna Fáil's attitude to that is going to be, or if Fianna Fáil might possibly have another route to government, that is a return to government with Fine Gael and perhaps one or two other parties. So I think kind of when you combine those, you know, that sort of strategic dilemma for Sinn Féin, along with the recent controversies, it just puts them in a place at the moment that they haven't been in for a couple of years. And I suppose that's what I was writing about.
Okay. With that assessment of the Fine Gael Ardèche over the weekend, and indeed that opinion piece where Pat Leahy says that Sinn Féin has hit a bump in the road, you can read all about it in the Irish Times. A political editor with the Irish Times, Pat Leahy, thanks for your time this morning. Now, we had a message in from Domo as well, who says, we have a country falling apart with food price increases, inflation at a very high level, housing crisis, a homeless crisis, a health crisis, etc. And we're discussing what politicians think of each other. Well, we're discussing what was discussed at the Fine Gael Ardèche over the weekend, and Leo Varadkar did deal with those issues, but ultimately he praised Micheál Martin for being what he described as a good Taoiseach, and also said that under no circumstances would they go into government with Sinn Féin. So we're just reflecting what was discussed in Athlone over the weekend. Now, just before we take a break, there's a piece breaking in the Irish Independent regarding Ireland's deadliest roads, and the counties most dangerous for road users have been revealed. Sligo is the most dangerous county for road deaths. Monaghan, Limerick and Cavan also had high rates of road deaths this year. And just to take a look at how Kildare fares then, going down through the figures. So Sligo top, they had 8 or 6 deaths this year. That's 8.57 per 100,000 people. Monaghan behind them with 5 deaths, 7.71 per 100,000 people. 13 road deaths in Limerick so far this year, 6.33 per 100,000 people. And then Kildare, around about middle of the table, or actually towards the bottom of the table, 4 road deaths here in this county during the course of 2020. 2022. That's 1.62 per 100,000 people. No road deaths in Carlow, which I believe is one of the only counties that have had no road deaths this year, if not the only. Three road deaths in Offaly, in Wicklow. Then if we look just over the border as to how many road deaths we've had there so far in 2022, no road deaths either in Wicklow. So Carlow and Wicklow, no road deaths in this year, while Dublin had 15 road deaths in 2022, all breaking there in a story revealed by the Irish Independent.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, we're going to turn our attentions now to local issues in the Newbridge area, and Social Democrats councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Chris Pender, joins us. Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
And issues that you've been raising and bringing to the attention of the council over the last couple of weeks. And we actually spoke before the break there about road traffic incidents and the fact that there have been four road deaths here in Kildare in this year. You were looking for traffic calming or low-cost accident safety scheme measures similar to those at Brownstown Cross, at Lumville Cross there at the Curra.
Yeah, so this was actually brought to my attention by a local resident who put a petition in relation to safety on the Curra very specifically. There's been a number of accidents at Lumville Cross. The resident who signed the petition was actually behind a car that got into a crash as a result of Lumville Cross. Now, I think everybody knows Lumville Cross. It's when you come up past Lumville House, and just people are kind of flying out of there onto the secondary road that's going through the Curra. So what I'm hoping that they'll do is they'll install what they've done in Brownstown. If they've installed a raised table, which forces people to slow down, forces people to take their time kind of turning onto new routes. But that's what they've done in Brownstown. Now, that may not work for there, and when the area engineer investigates it, they may identify another way to do it. So the response I got was rather positive, and it does seem as though they're going to investigate it to see if it falls under the low-cost accident measures. Unfortunately, the municipal district budget itself is gone, but the low-cost accident measures is something that could be applied for additional funding. So it seems positive, hopefully, anyway.
All right, good stuff. Staying in Newbridge then, you were looking for the council to confirm the current status of the review of services that are on top of the Newbridge Water Tower. Where is this?
The water tower that's right down at the end of Cuttery Road.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so that's exactly where, and the reason why I'm looking for them to confirm what they're doing with the services is one of the things I'm hoping for is that we'll be able to get some sort of mural or like a new kind of design for the water tower itself, because as I've said time and time again, when it comes to street art or anything like that, one of the best ways to kind of to reinvigorate an area is through public art. And what I'm hoping for is that once these services are moved, and it sounds like a really boring motion. It's not one of those. It's not one of the kind of the sexy motions, but the equipment that's on top of it is basically used by Kildare County Council for most of the technology they use within the county. So they're hoping to move that onto the top of Whitewater, but that's a whole other ballgame that they have to do with them. They have to make agreements in relation to costs and stuff like that. So once that's moved, we're hoping that we'll be able to investigate some sort of public art for the water tower itself.
Okay, you also wanted the council to ensure that the undergrounding of cables form an integral part of any current or future Part 8 applications in the Kildare Newbridge MD.
Yeah, and again, this was a cost piece. The Newbridge Tidy Towns, for instance, in the report that was given to them when they got their silver medal, was that it would be one of the best ways to kind of make our main street look a lot better instead of having cables hanging everywhere. And it's been on other towns, Tidy Towns reports too. And the hope is that when we put in a Part 8, that we include it as part of that, so that going forward, it's not going to cost us, so that we're not going to, let's say, for instance, we redo our main street, we do all of this amazing work to it, and then all of a sudden, the ESB come down along the line in about 2-3 years, and they decide, right, we're going to underground all the cables. Now, all of this amazing work we've done has to be dug up, and all of the cables have to be put down. So what I'm hoping to try and get the council to do is to create a system whereby we're not constantly re-digging things up. We're not constantly wasting money where we do something, then somebody digs it up, then it has to be fixed again. So I'm just trying to future-proof the system itself where, like I said, any future Part 8, so because we have a couple of Part 8s coming up in Newbridge, specifically one for the public library and a cycle scheme that's coming up. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to include it as part of the Part 8 so that we can show the ESB, because they're the ones who can fund the underground of the cables, so that we can show the ESB that we're serious about this and that we want it done before we do any other works.
Okay, I noticed as well, Chris, on your Facebook page there in the last few days that you put up a post to say, great to hear that the compulsory purchase order for the R445 Newhall Junction Improvement Scheme has been announced. And this is the junction around Floods Cross, when you come out then to the main kind of carriageway between Naas and Newbridge. There's going to be significant changes there, Chris.
Yeah, there's going to be massive changes. There's a roundabout including cycling infrastructure that'll go along with it. And again, this is another one of those roads that is, like, it's to be honest, the layout of it is ridiculous, and I don't understand why it's like that. You've got essentially a dual carriageway with a crossroads in the middle of it, and no way for people to... Now, from a cost point of view, I would prefer it if they had just closed off the median and let people drive up and down to the other two motorways if they need to turn around. But this is what we've gotten now. And what it will do is there'll literally be a roundabout smack bang in the middle of it, which will, again, cause people to slow down and use it properly. Because right now, Floods Cross itself is... Like, I mean, you're talking about driving out from a kind of a small local road onto the dual carriageway. Now, if you want to go the other way, you have to drive out over the first part of the road, over, like, two lanes of traffic and what are those things called? Over two lanes of traffic into the middle of the median and then turn into traffic as well. So what's there makes no sense, and hopefully this new scheme will make it a lot safer for people driving that road.
All right, good stuff. Finally then, before we let you go, last Thursday there was the Cost of Living Coalition holding a protest in Newbridge Town Hall. You were there. You were one of the spokespeople as well. Was there a good turnout?
There was a decent enough turnout. It was our first meeting. It wasn't exactly advertised exceptionally well. We had maybe 15-20 people there. And it's only the start of the campaign itself. So I wasn't expecting a massive turnout. And I think we also have to be aware it is a cost of living. It's a cost of living meeting. So we have to be aware of the fact that people may have been in work. People may not have had the money to be able to afford to put petrol in their car to actually drive to the meeting or anything like that. So going forward, listen, it's a civil society campaign that involves multiple different political parties on the left and multiple different civil society organisations like unions and stuff like that. So we're hopeful that going forward it'll start to grow and build momentum.
OK, Social Democrats councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Chris Pender, thanks for your time.